Even for the New York Times, this editorial was chilling. People have a problem with our religious liberties.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, this is Michael Brown. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire. I believe we will start our week together with faith, with edification, with encouragement, even in the midst of some serious things that we talk about. A lot coming your way. I want to talk to you just a little bit about Islam. I want to talk to you about word that came out the end of last week that the Supreme Court is going to hear cases regarding same-sex so-called marriage. That will go to the Supreme Court. And I want to tell you about this editorial in the New York Times, not the op-ed piece that I talked about last week and wrote about where I said the New York Times openly sanctions bigotry, openly sanctions discrimination of our religious freedoms and freedoms of speech. But I read another editorial that is even more surprising, perhaps. So we're going to talk about that. First, I just want to thank all of you who took time to read my lengthy article on Newsweek. The editors were really pleased with the response. One of them notified me on Friday that we were on the most shared list on their website. And then by Friday night and well into Saturday, the article, my lengthy response rebuttal to Kurt Eichenwald's Christmas article about the Bible, that we were the most shared article on their site and the third most read article. So that's significant. That means that many of you read the article, shared the article. So many of you followed through on Facebook and Twitter. So thanks for doing that. That means a lot of people got to hear things that they wouldn't normally get to hear. And I really appreciate Newsweek, their openness, desire to facilitate dialogue. And this Wednesday, we are scheduled to have the journalist that wrote the initial controversial article on the air with me. My goal is not to fight with him, or my goal is to find out, why did you write the article? What were your goals? What do you think about the Bible? Who do you think Jesus is? And then to air out some of our differences and disagreements. That's going to be coming your way on Wednesday. Also today, I'm going to be interacting more via social media, via Facebook and Twitter. So I'll be looking for your comments. Link to the announcement about the broadcast, which we put up every day, especially on Facebook. And I'm going to try to interact there as well. First, just a brief comment about Islam. I understand that the perception of Muslims is that their faith is disrespected in the West, that in other parts of the world, that they're the ones that are often persecuted, but you don't hear about that. You just hear about the Islamic terrorists. That Muhammad is completely and consistently misrepresented, and that he himself was not a terrorist, that he was the founder of a beautiful, ethical world religion, and that Muslims would feel the moment you see Muslim characters in a TV show or in the movies that the Muslim is sure to be some kind of fanatic and terrorist. I understand that Muslims are concerned about that. I understand that in certain ways, Muslims have received the short end of the stick. At the same time, when I saw the announcement that in Texas there was going to be a conference, a rally called Stand With the Prophet Rally, Muslim leaders coming together to combat so-called Islamophobia in America, and I thought, oh, come on, this is just this time, this season, with everything that has happened with Muslim terrorism, with radical Islam around the world in recent days, in recent months, this is not the time to have a We Stand With the Prophet rally. It's a time for Muslim leaders to have a We Stand Against Terrorism rally. That's what they should be doing, and it would do them a lot more good in terms of trying to promote their religion than to say we're fighting against Islamophobia and we're having a We Stand With the Prophet rally. So I just wanted to mention that a graphic we put on Facebook to that effect has gotten a lot of attention. Okay, we come back. I'm going to start with the Supreme Court. The righteous will never be shaken.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, blessed and delighted to be with you. Thanks so much for tuning in to the broadcast. If you're not connected with me on social media, please do so. Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. That's A-S-K D-R Brown on Facebook. And Dr. Dr. Michael L. Brown on Twitter. Make sure you have the two L's in the middle there. But the easiest way to connect is to go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. And just click on the Facebook icon. That'll get you there, the Twitter icon, the YouTube icon, to take advantage of all the new videos that we put out. We are continuing to do the work on my radio studio, turning it into a video studio as well. And we hope to be producing high-quality video content of the best of our radio broadcasts, even by sometime next month. All right, before I talk to you about this New York Times editorial by Frank Bruni, who is a regular op-ed columnist there, I want to talk about the news that came out the end of last week that said that the Supreme Court would be hearing cases regarding same-sex so-called marriage. Now, again, I know if you're listening to me and you're gay or lesbian or you are a straight ally of the LGBT community, you're terribly offended by my referring to so-called marriage. It does not mean that I don't believe that there are gays and lesbians who love each other, who are committed to each other, who have strong romantic feelings towards each other, who have bonded together over a period of years, who want to be together for many years, who want to even raise a family together. I'm not denying that. I'm simply saying it's not marriage, no matter what the courts say. It's not marriage, and once we redefine it, we make it meaningless. I've said it many times. I've sought to demonstrate that over the years. You can call it bigotry or hatred, or you could say, all right, if you understand marriage as it's always been, not just the union of any two people, but the union of a man and woman. And let me point out that even in its different forms in which it's existed through the years with multiple partners, polygamy and other things like that, there was always the male-female component. If you can simply understand that just like a man is a male and a woman is a female, that a husband is a male and a bride is a female, that a mother is a female and a father is a male, that words have meaning in the same way the word marriage has a meaning, and it's never meant in our history and in any large-scale way in world history the union of any two people. But in any case, the Supreme Court has said that they will now hear these cases where there were courts that upheld the ban on redefining marriage. What's happened is in state after state after state in our union, judges have overturned the will and vote of the people. In some cases where you had 60% of the vote, 70% of the vote, even more of the vote, saying we do not want to redefine marriage, judges have said, well, you don't have a constitutional right to do that. When these cases came before the Supreme Court last year, they said we're not going to hear those cases. What that meant was that this redefinition of marriage spread through a total now of 36 states, even though 31 states voted and said marriage was the union of a man and a woman. Now, in roughly five states, there have been court decisions against that, saying we uphold the vote of the people. We will not redefine marriage. Marriage is the union of a man and a woman. Now that force is an issue, and really many expect that the Supreme Court would hear these cases. So it's on the fast ramp. The plan is to hear them by April and decide by June. And I want to comment on that in advance. Obviously, we'll address it much more as we get closer, but I want to comment on it in advance and lay out a few things in terms of our attitude, in terms of our response, all right? Let me say that last year, just a few months back, when the court said they would not vote on this, I had one guest on, an expert in these areas, and he gave a different perspective than others were, that it could have been the conservative justices, that they knew that they were not going to get a favorable vote. So they saw no reason to move ahead from this angle. Now, at this point, either they have to do it. There's no choice because of the potential division now in the different states in America over this. Or they felt that this is coming from a different angle, and they could always rule and throw everything back to the states to make decisions. Exactly how it'll play out, we'll have top attorneys on and experts in these areas to talk to us. But I want to say a few things first. Number one, if the Supreme Court ruled in such a way to say that marriage should not be redefined constitutionally, if somehow they did rule that, gay activists are not going to stop. I wouldn't expect them to. And all those who have been, quote, married, they're not going to say, well, you can now invalidate that with your opinion. So either way, this issue is not going away. If it's ruled in a way that we feel is right, that we feel is just, that we feel is for the best, gay activists are not going to stop their battle. They've seen great victories. They've seen great progress. They believe it's just a matter of time, regardless of which way the courts rule. It's just a matter of time as the younger generation gets older, the older generation that staunchly opposes redefining marriage, as we are no longer on the scene, that society is just going to change. They'll look at the day when we thought it was wrong for two men or two women to, quote, marry. They'll look at that the same way that we look at the days of slavery. That's how gay activists are thinking. So they're certainly not going to stop their battles. And you've got massively funded large groups like the ACLU that are going to keep going after these things. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, on our end, if the wrong decision is made, if a constitutional right was found for two men or two women to, quote, marry, if that was the case, that's not going to change our views, our convictions, our stands either. Why should it? If a ruling that went against gay activists wouldn't stop them from doing what they feel is right, why should a ruling that would go against us stop us from doing what we feel is right? Doesn't make any sense, does it? Why should they have more conviction than we do? Why should they go on fighting and we're supposed to just lay everything down and give up? Oh, you say because the tide has turned against us. At the moment, it is a temporary tide. That's all it is. If Jesus doesn't come soon in our lifetimes, this is a multi-generational battle. It's no different than Roe v. Wade. It's no different than the Supreme Court legalizing abortion on demand. 73, it looked like the tide had turned, and the tide had been turning. And many pro-life forces were discouraged and in disarray. The pro-life movement is stronger today than it was in 73. Oh, there's been the absolute tragedy of the slaughter of over 50 million unborn in the womb. Absolutely tragic, horrific, beyond words, beyond measure. The loss is massive beyond what we can imagine. And the judgment that must be in our midst because of that is beyond what we would understand. Nonetheless, pro-lifers have continued to move forward because Roe v. Wade is fundamentally wrong. If the same way, if the Supreme Court decided to overthrow the meaning of marriage and side with those who wanted to redefine marriage, it's wrong. We continue to stand up for what's right. There may be costs and consequences for it, but we continue to stand up for what's right. Number three, and this is the most important of all, God is still God. The world's been messed up since Adam and Eve fell. There have been wrong things happening in the world. There have been heterosexual marriages messed up. There's been all kinds of heterosexual promiscuity. There's been murder. There's been robbery. There's been drug use. There are gangs. There are wars. There's rape. There's injustice. The world's messed up. And there are many wrong legal decisions that are made, and the courts blow at different times. And we've had all kinds of injustice in our country. And if the Supreme Court makes a wrong decision, God is still God. What I mean is, we continue to worship, we continue to meet with him, we continue to commune with him, we grieve over things that have happened on our watch and our day, and we believe that there'll be large, long-term or large-scale negative consequences for the redefining of marriage if it does happen, and that the battle to overturn that over a period of time will be a long haul that will require grace and perseverance. Nonetheless, we worship God. We get out of bed that next morning and we worship God and we praise Him just the same, and we honor Him just the same, and we confess Jesus as Lord and we share the gospel. And number four, the Supreme Court ruling either way does not affect our calling to love our neighbor as ourselves. The Supreme Court ruling either way does not affect our calling to reach out with love and compassion to every person we meet who identifies as LGBT. And in fact, if I have an opportunity, if I was sitting next to a person on my left side on the plane was a straight person, and on my right side on the plane was a gay person, I'd be more likely to engage the gay person, want to hear their story, and want to share the love of God with them. All right, we come back. I'm going to talk to you about the New York Times editorial. As I said, it is chilling. A whole lot to cover today. I'm so glad we have this time together right here on the Line of Fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I was talking to Nancy the other day, and she said to me, you know, you need to take excerpts that you've written in A Queer Thing Happened to America and some of your other writings, and you need to say, look, we told you this was coming, we told you this was coming, we told you this was coming, and look at this and this and this and this. They've all happened as you said they'd happen. And I said, I actually did that in an article last April called I Hate to Say I Told You So, with specific quotes from A Queer Thing Happened to America and other writing, and said, hey, we told you this was coming. And look, in most cases, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know these things. Michael Brown, welcome back to the Line of Fire. In fact, it was about 10 years ago, as I began to read more about gay activism, as God began to burden me with the word reach out and resist, reach out to the people with compassion, resist the agenda with courage. As He began to burden me about that, and I began to read, there was a book by Alan Sears and Craig Austin. Alan Sears, the founder of the Alliance Defense Fund, which is now the Alliance Defending Freedom. And the book was called The Homosexual Agenda, and laid out plainly, this is years back, laid out plainly how gay activism would be the principal threat to freedom of religion, speech, and conscience. The more I looked at that, the clearer it became. And then, of course, we've been able to document that and follow that and watch it. And as I've said for many months now, the good news is the bad news, or the bad news is the good news, meaning that the more things go in the wrong direction and the worse they get, the more impossible it will be for people to deny what we are talking about. All right, Frank Bruni writes an opinion piece in the New York Times. He's an op-ed columnist. This was a week ago, Sunday, January 10th. It was called Your God and My Dignity. So I guess that's a week ago Saturday, but it's the Sunday review. Your God and My Dignity, Religious Liberty, Bigotry, and Gays. Now, he closes out the article with some kind words. He says this, I respect people of faith. I salute the extraordinary works of compassion and social justice that many of them and many of their churches do. I acknowledge that we in the news media, because we tend to emphasize conflict and wrongdoing and hypocrisy, sometimes focus more on the shortcomings of religious institutions than on their positive contributions. He said, and I support the right of people to believe what they do and say what they wish. Now listen, in their pews, homes, and hearts. Now, when I actually read the heart of his editorial, where he lays out what he has to say, oh boy, it is pretty intense. But in short, what he's saying is, keep your religion to yourself. He says, outside of those places, you must put up with me just as I put up with you. No, 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 Mr. Bruni. That's not how things are today. It's not a matter of you put up with me and I put up with you. We're going to have our differences. I'm all for living in our society in the midst of our differences. I am all for having conflicting beliefs, conflicting interests, conflicting worldviews and values. That's going to happen in this world. It happens all the time. Years back, I sat down with a man who used to be the editor of the gay newspaper for the Carolinas. I sat down with him years ago as we lived in the same state and near the same city. I said, okay, you have your very strong convictions. I have my very strong convictions. How are we going to live as neighbors in the same city? And we sat down together to talk about those things. I've done that with another gay activist and his partner. Sat down with him and said, okay, how are we going to be neighbors in the midst of our conflicts in the same city? Of course, that's simply living with civility. But what you are basically telling me, sir, is that if you're going to live your lifestyle publicly, I cannot hold to my beliefs and convictions publicly. Let's hear that again. I support the right of people to believe what they do and say what they wish in their pews, homes, and hearts. This is mind-boggling. You do not have the right, according to Frank Bruni of the New York Times, you do not have the right to believe what you do and say what you wish outside of your pews and homes and hearts if it's going to bring a conflict to him and those that he stands with. Now, he is a gay writer, and I want to read more of what he has to say. Let me just give you a heads up. This discussion is going to be continuing past this half-hour break into the next hour. If you miss the show, if you only get a half hour of the broadcast, go to my website later today and go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest broadcast. You can listen to the entire show. Also, check on my latest article. Click on latest article while you're there as well. And we took the audio interview I did with Larry Tomczak, my dear friend Larry, last week regarding Ellen DeGeneres, addressing him on her TV show at length. It took 3-4 minutes to do it. Larry responded. It's a great, lively conversation. We put that up on YouTube. You can see it, listen to it by going to AskDrBrown.org and clicking on latest video. If you want to keep listening online, same thing, my website, right on the homepage, click on the banner to keep on listening. Frank Bruni says this, I've been called many unpleasant things in my life and I've deserved no small number of them, but I chafe at this latest label, a threat to your religious liberty. I don't mean me alone. I mean me and my evidently menacing kind, men who have romantic relationships with other men and maybe want to marry them, and women in analogous situations. According to many of the Americans who still cast judgment on us, I do somehow tramples you, not merely running counter to your creed, but running roughshod over it. Let me tell you flat out. He says, if you're a baker, if you're a photographer, if you're a florist, if this is your business, and two men say we want to, quote, marry, two women say they want to, quote, marry, you have to do what they're asking you to do because it's your business and it's not a religious act. That's just your business. He is absolutely saying that if we stand for, from his perspective, if gay activists stand for what they do and redefine marriage, you do not have the right to any type of public religious difference with that. That's what it comes down to. Am I moved by this? No, I'm stirred. I'm stirred to address these things. I'm stirred to write. I'm stirred to speak. And I'm stirred to pray for Frank and for others that they would come into the fullness of the knowledge of God. That's the ultimate issue. That's the ultimate solution, a gospel solution. But friends, I've told you, I'm telling you again, those who came out of the closet want to put us in the closet. Last week, we got such a strong response to the brand new, literally hot off the press, family Bible, the Messianic Jewish version of the Bible, the Tree of Life version. It reads beautifully, and it has Messianic Jewish distinctives as well. There are ministries where you have to send in a love gift of $100 or more, and of course, you get to help their ministries as you do. Well, we have it on our website, just $60, and we're paying the postage. It's beautiful. It is high quality. It is a fabulous gift to have and to give. We're extending it another week. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, and watch the video.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to continue with this editorial from Frank Bruni in the New York Times, January 10th, Your God and My Dignity. He says the idea that redefining marriage somehow tramples us as believers, not really running counter to our creed, but running roughshod over it. He says that's absurd. And the deference that many politicians show to such thinking, he says, is an example not of religion getting the protection it must, but of religious people getting a pass that isn't warranted. It's an illustration of religion's favored status in a country that's still working out the separation of church and state business and hasn't yet gotten it right. Religion should have a favored status in America. That's part of our history. That's part of what made us great. That's part of our very founding from the very, very beginning. Religious freedoms and a nation that's governed by a religious morality. The founding fathers, even the most secular of them, would have been absolutely shocked beyond words to hear the idea that Christians who said that two men or two women shouldn't, quote, marry, were now somehow abusing their rights to religious freedom. Our nation is what it is because of religion having a favored place. And that's how our nation is set up. And when we lose that, we lose whatever greatness we have left and the key to our future greatness. And Mr. Bruni continues and says this, we're at an interesting crossroads brought about by the rapid advance of same-sex marriage. It's now legal in 36 states, including as of last week, Florida. Equality is increasingly being enshrined into law, and one response from those opposed to it is that the law shouldn't apply to them. Why? Because it contradicts their religious beliefs, which they use as a fig tree for intolerance. All right, at least he's putting everything right on the table. His issue right now is not having the ability to legally, quote, marry. His issue is you not accepting that. His issue is me not affirming that to the point that if I had a business and he came to me and wanted my business to participate in his same-sex so-called wedding, that I would have to do it, that I do not have the religious right to refuse to. And he says we're using our religious beliefs for fig tree, as a fig leaf for intolerance. Mr. Bruni, we are convinced based on the scriptures, our Bible, God's word, that marriage is the union of a man and a woman, not two people, two men, two women. We are convinced, based on God's word, that it is sinful and wrong for two men or two women to come together in a romantic or sexual relationship. We're convinced of that. We're convicted of that. And listen, the Bible is not for us a manual for going around killing people or discriminating against people. We're talking about a foundation of foundations here, marriage. Look in the mirror. You were made for a woman. A woman was made for you. We don't feel it's right to violate natural law. We don't feel it's right to deprive a child of either a mother or father by the design of those caring for that child or bringing that child into the world. There are people who use religion as a fig leaf for intolerance, just as there are people who use atheism or enlightenment or something else, so-called enlightenment, as a fig leaf for intolerance. Yeah, those people exist. They're hypocrites in every faith and non-faith. But you are telling me, sir, that the only possible reason that I could say that marriage is not the union of any two people, that marriage is not for two men or not for two women, how can you possibly tell me what you're telling me, namely that it is only intolerance that can hold to that? So the entire human race, basically, with the rarest of exceptions through all of history and all of Jewish and Christian tradition, not to mention the tradition of other faiths, it is all intolerance and nothing less. Mr. Bruni, I say that your statement and view, your viewpoint is the intolerant one. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'll tell you, though, the good thing about an extreme article, as the one in the New York Times that was blasting Fire Chief Kevin Cochran and those standing with him for his dismissal by Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed, and now, in certain ways, an even more extreme, or at least equally extreme, editorial. And I guess this one came out first, but I only spotted it afterwards. January 10th, Frank Bruni commenting on politics, social issues, education, and culture. The good thing is at least it's right out on the table. At least it's undeniable. It's what we've been saying for years. Those who come out of the closet want to put us in the closet. Those who are fighting for their, quote, equality don't want us to have equality. Some beliefs, just as in Orwell's Animal Farm, with some animals, some beliefs are more equal than others. Let me go on with the editorial. If you missed any of the broadcast, you can catch it all by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and clicking on Latest Broadcast. According to James Essex, a lawyer with the ACLU, he says, this is the new wave, the new frame, meaning that we differ with redefining of marriage based on our religious beliefs and believe that we should be able to hold to that and not be forced to embrace it, endorse it, participate in it. Essex said that last year, more than 10 states considered legislation that, to varying degree, blessed discrimination based on sexual orientation by people claiming that it was a right, a matter of religious liberty. Only one of those states, Mississippi, passed such a law, but efforts elsewhere persist. A Virginia lawmaker introduced this sort of legislation just a few weeks ago. Mr. Bruni, it's not discrimination. If our religious beliefs, along with everything else I've mentioned, if our religious beliefs tell us that this is wrong, that we should not endorse it, participate in it, it's not discrimination, not to sanction this radical new experiment for a nation that the world's never seen. And where it has seen it, it's failed miserably. He says the issue is also playing out in courts. As Michael Paulson noted in a recent story in the Times, judges have been hearing complaints about a florist or baker or photographer refusing to serve customers having same-sex weddings. They've been siding so far with the gay couples, but this is only the beginning, especially with the contest for the Republican presidential nomination gathering steam. So, of course, what he's saying, and he will say it explicitly in a little while. He will say it explicitly that the florist or the baker or the photographer doesn't have any right to refuse participation. It's easy enough for a same-sex couple to find another florist or another baker or another photographer, is it not? If you knew that what you are asking them to do is a fundamental violation of their religious beliefs, and maybe you know them to be nice, loving, caring people, but they are deeply convinced for many reasons that marriage is not intended for two men or two women. So this photographer, say Elaine Photography, New Mexico, this Christian photographer, that she said no to doing a horror show. She was going to ask to do photography there. No, that was contrary to her Christian convictions. Is that discrimination? No, that's religious liberty. And someone can easily go somewhere else and find plenty of photographers who'll shoot that. You have to understand that if she's going to shoot the wedding, she's got to do it with sensitivity. She's got to line those two men up, pose them. Okay, here, you know, kiss now and hug now and do this and that. Okay, now they need a romantic pose. That would be a violation of her integrity. According to Bruni, you know, she should do it because it's not a religious act. Of course it's a religious act. A religious act is not just praying. We live lives committed to God. We live lives that would be lives of worship. When we go to work, we want to commit that day to God. When we're raising our kids, we want to commit that to God. Whatever we do, we want to do to the glory of God. Shall I say wow loudly and clearly, maybe spell it out? Several likely candidates, Ted Cruz, Rick Santorum, Mike Huckabee, get a special gleam in their eyes when they're denigrating gays. And Huckabee has perfected a stew of homophobia and puerility on display in a new book of his that sounds like a collection of recipes by Paula Deen for the NRA. God, guns, grits, and gravy. The three copies, you get a free sandwich combo at Chick-fil-A. Kidding. Then he goes on with his sarcasm and his ridiculing of Huckabee. I'll pass by that. I'll pass by his comments about Jeb Bush, although Jeb has already concerned conservatives that he will go soft on some of these key issues, which would be a shame. But here's what he says. For starters, this perpetuates confusion, some of which is cynically engineered, about the consequences of marriage equality laws. They do not pertain to religious services or what happens in a church, temple, or mosque. No clergy member will be compelled to preside over gay nuptials. Civil weddings are covered. That's it. Ah, for the moment. Are you unaware, Mr. Bruni, of couples that are suing denominations because of the denominations or the churches refused to comply? Are you aware that in Norway it is compulsory for the state church, which is the vast majority of represents the vast majority of Norwegians, that it is compulsory to supply clergy? If the person there says, I cannot marry these two men or these two women, then the bishop has to provide somebody else? Are you aware of that? He goes on, but also religious liberty sounds disturbingly like a dog whistle to the crowd that wants specified, codified exemption from anti-discrimination laws. It's one of those phrases they lean on. If Bush didn't know that, he should have. If he did, he just sided for the moment with religious extremists. As these lamentations about religious liberty get tossed around, it's worth remembering that racists have used the same argument to try to perpetuate segregation. This is not segregation. Segregation was two human beings exactly the same in terms of this is a man, this is a woman, this is a restaurant where they can go and eat. No. The blacks could not eat at that restaurant, or they had to come in through the back door. The blacks could not use a bathroom used by whites. That has nothing to do with radically redefining marriage. That was saying that a man and a woman, a male and female, if one happens to be black and the other happens to be white, that they cannot marry. That has nothing to do with redefining marriage. That has to do with bigotry and discrimination. Just because religious beliefs were misused doesn't believe that all religious beliefs are discrimination. Please. Let me skip down here. Christian fundamentalists in this country are practiced at claiming marginalization and oppression. They're always saying they're kept out of the public square, and that's baloney, said Marcy Hamilton, a constitutional law expert and the author of God versus the Gavel. They're all over the public square. Yeah, and we are. Didn't he just say? Did Mr. Bruni just say that courts are consistently deciding against us? Didn't we just have our votes overturned in state after state by activist churches? They and their churches inject themselves into political debates, Mr. Bruni says, while enjoying tax-exempt status. They get public support in questionable circumstances. After a student Christian magazine insisted on its right to funds from the University of Virginia, the Supreme Court decided in 1995 that if a non-religious publication got financial help from a public school, so must a religious publication, even if it's proselytizing. Well, why can't you proselytize? If it's a school publication and you're religious, why can't you proselytize just like the others that are non-religious proselytize? Oh, let's skip down. What's more, in a country that's not supposed to promote any one religion over others, we do precisely that. No, the Constitution said you're not to have a state church promote one form of Christianity over another. And then he asked this. Would we be content to let a Muslim store owner who believes that a woman should always cover her hair refuse service to women who do not? Or a Mormon hairdresser who spurns coffee to turn away clients who saunter in with frappuccinos? Again, that's not the same as redefining marriage. But if a Muslim store owner said, these are our standards, what if a store says no shoes, no shirts, right? Can't come in without shoes or shirts. And let's just say it's not a law of the state. That's what they say. Or a restaurant says you can't come in here unless you dress a certain way. Well, a Muslim store owner could say, hey, we don't allow anyone in here in a bikini. We don't allow anyone in here that we consider seductively dressed because that's not the environment that we allow. Would they have the right to? Yeah, they're only going to get a certain kind of customer. But even so, to compare that to saying to someone, you must participate in the redefinition of marriage is extraordinarily close-minded and discriminating against religious beliefs. Baking a cake, he says, arranging roses, running an inn, these aren't religious acts. Certainly not if the establishments aren't religious enclaves and are doing business with and even dependent on the general public. What's fascinating in all this is that Mr. Bruni apparently would have no problem whatsoever, just my surmise, as Theodore Schubert demonstrated, He called 13 different bakeries that were either gay-friendly or gay-owned and said, I'd like you to make cakes that say, inscribe on it or on a cookie, gay marriage is not good, something like that. And every one of them said they would not do it. And by the way, they have the right not to, in my view. They have the right to say they won't, and then have the consequences of it. And if you know it's going to be offensive, don't go to those people asking it. Same with Christians. But I imagine Mr. Bruni would say, well, that's perfectly right they did that because they were asking to do something that would be discriminatory and bigoted. But I wonder how he would answer that question. Or do I wonder at all? There's another great response to this editorial. I want to get into that when we come back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are heading towards the finish line on this last segment of the Line of Fire today. Before I share a response to the Frank Bruni editorial that I've been getting into a good part of this broadcast called Frank Bruni versus Religious Liberty, published on nationalreview.com by Ramesh Panuru. Before I get into that, I just want to encourage you to visit the website. We are continuing this week the special offer on the Messianic Jewish Family Bible. This is one of the most beautifully produced Bibles I've ever held in my hands. I really mean that. It's got a wonderful translation put together by a team of Messianic Jewish and Christian scholars. I'm part of that team. There's beautiful artwork inside. It's just a beautiful family Bible. It lists for $69.95. There's some ministries, because it's just come out, that are asking for a love gift of $100 or more. And that's fine. I mean, they have ministry needs like everyone. But we want to get it out to as many as possible. $60 postage paid. If you can help with an additional gift, that's wonderful. But we want to get it out to as many as possible. And it's obviously an expensive Bible for us to get as well to turn around and distribute to you. So take advantage of this very special offer. We'll pay the postage, as we said. And to order, call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown. If you're able to do that, AskDrBrown.org. You'll see right on the homepage a blurb about the Bible. It'll tell you more about the special qualities of this. And then you can click to watch a video where I hold up my hands and talk about it. Just a 90-second video. And then you can order from there. 1-800-278-9978. All right. This is what Ramesh Panuru has to say. Frank Bruni writes that many Americans wrongly treat him as a threat to religious liberty because he is gay. The trouble is that he is a threat to religious liberty. It's not because he's gay. It's because he's one of those contemporary liberals who has a conception of religious liberty that is illiberal and narrow, especially compared to the historic American practice. He talks about, for example, the tax exemption for ministers. Frank Bruni has an issue with that, and that gives special privilege to ministers and so on. But Panuru points out that there's nothing questionable about this. The Supreme Court, including radical left justice like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, or strongly leftist judge like Bader Ginsburg, the Supreme Court ruled 9-0 that the Constitution requires the ministerial exemption. Bruni also believes that the exemption of religious institutions from taxes is a special favor from the government and one that should come attached to more restrictions on these institutions' activities than we already have. And in addition to being out of the mainstream, Bruni's thoughts on religious freedom are half-baked. So he refers to a passage that we mentioned. Should a Muslim store owner would be let a Muslim store owner who believes that a woman should always cover her hair refuse service to women who do not, etc. In the same way, why should a merchant whose version of Christianity condemns homosexuality get to exile gays and lesbians? So Panuru responds, where to start? One, we don't need legal coercion to keep Muslim store owners or Mormon hairdressers from doing the things that he mentioned. Market pressures, that is, civil society without the backing of force, seem perfectly well equipped to do the job. So we're agreeing. You don't pass a law and say the Muslim has to do this and that. No, if if everybody in this town eats pork and you got a Muslim caterer and you say, hey, we don't provide pork, they go out of business, they go out of business. You don't force them to provide pork. He said, two, what would the alternative to market resolution be? A law banning discrimination against coffee drinkers? That was the Mormon illustration, if you wouldn't serve someone who wasn't a coffee drinker. Three, if such a law were to pass, religious liberty protections would probably not help the hairdresser in question, since as far as I know, there is no more Mormon prohibition on consorting with the caffeinated. Four, I know of no credible legal case anywhere in which a florist or baker is claiming a religious liberty right to exile gays and lesbians. Correct. We're not talking about exiling anybody, Mr. Bruni. We're talking about not forcing people of faith to do things contrary to their faith and that are not murderous, cruel things. They are things that make perfect sense, and they are things that are based on love for God and love for the society. Bruni closes his column by saying, I support the right of people to believe what they do and say what they wish in their pews, homes, and hearts, just not elsewhere. That's where I started the show. I started the segment dealing with this. How very generous of him, Bruni says, to let people say what they wish in their hearts. It's another piece of rhetoric that betrays his pretensions to moderation. There's no moderation in his editorial. So Panuru closes by saying, as does another stray remark about how our country is still working out the separation of church and state business and hasn't yet gotten it quite right. Bruni should say that our country and its constitution are too protective of religious freedom and need to be changed accordingly. I don't think he would have a good case, but he would have a more candid or at least self-deluded one. What scares me, not scares me, like, oh no, I'm scared, but scares me in terms of concerns me, is the fact that so many people reading the Times would agree and say, absolutely, you've got to deal with these religious fanatics once and for all. You say, well, Mike, why do you get into these things? Why do you address these things? It's not, look, we just need to win souls. We just need to pray. We need to make disciples. Okay. If you're telling me that marriage is not a central foundation of our country and that redefining marriage doesn't affect ultimately the whole country, fine. If you're telling me that it doesn't matter what environment kids are raised in, whether they have two daddies or two mommies or a mother and father or a single parent home, and none of that matters, fine. If you're telling me that our religious liberties and freedoms of speech and conscience do not matter, if that's what you're telling me, fine. But I would say with all respect that you're sticking your head in the sand to say that. And I would say that you're not thinking in a multi-generational way, because our kids and our grandkids would have every right to say to us, how'd you let this happen? What were you thinking? He said to me, but Mike, we're called to go and make disciples. Yes, correct. But how do disciples live? We live in this world. We don't spend every waking, breathing moment sharing the gospel with the lost. And if you do, God bless you for it. We live our lives in this world. We have kids in our schools. We work in places of business. And these things affect every one of us. So let's get our heads out of the sand. Let's get our hearts given over to God afresh. Let's recognize that there is an all-out war that has been declared on freedom of religion, speech, and conscience. And it's been done more and more overtly by gay activists who, for the moment, are saying, you can keep your faith in the closet. But soon, they're saying you can keep your faith in the church building. Soon it could be you can keep your faith, but only in the closet. Mr. Bruni and other gay activists, authors, columnists, entertainers, politicians, judges, and those who stand with them, I just want to make a public announcement. We're not going in the closet. All right, friends, AskDrBrown.org. Check out latest article, latest video, latest broadcast. Make sure you take advantage of the special offer we're extending this week with the Messianic Jewish Family Bible. My bottom line today, those who came out of the closet fighting for what they say is equality and their rights want to put us in the closet. We are not going in the closet.